ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 17 एंटाइटल द डिसेंट ऑफ द रिवर गैंजेस टेक्स्ट नंबर 12। In these 8 varshas or tracts of land, human beings live 10,000 years according to earthly calculations. All the inhabitants are almost like demigods. They have the bodily strength of 10,000 elephants. Indeed, their bodies are as sturdy as thunderbolts. The youthful duration of their lives is very pleasing. And both men and women enjoy sexual union with great pleasure for a long time. After years of sensual pleasure, when a balance of 1 year of life remains, the wife conceives a child. Thus, the standard of pleasure for the residents of these heavenly regions is exactly like that of the human beings who lived during Treta Yuga. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are 4 yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga and Kali Yuga. During the first yuga, Satya Yuga, people are very pious. Everyone practices the mystic yoga system for spiritual understanding and realization of God. Because everyone was always absorbed in samadhi, no one was interested in material sense enjoyment. During Treta Yuga, people enjoyed sense pleasure without tribulations. Material miseries began in Dwapar Yuga, but they were not very stringent. Stringent material miseries really began from the advent of Kali Yuga. Another point in this verse is that in all 8 of these heavenly verses, although men and women enjoy sex pleasure, there is no pregnancy. Pregnancy takes place only in lower grade life. For example, animals like dogs and hogs become pregnant twice a year, and each time they beget at least 6 offspring. Even lower species of life such as snakes give birth to hundreds of young at one time. This verse informs us that in grades of life higher than ours, pregnancy occurs once in a lifetime. People still have sex life, but there is no pregnancy. In the spiritual world, people are not very attracted to sex life due to their exalted devotional attitude. Practically speaking, there is no sex life in the spiritual world. But even if sometimes it does occur, there is no pregnancy at all. On the planet Earth, however, human beings do not become pregnant, although the tendency is to avoid having children. In this sinful age of Kali, people have even taken to the process of killing the child in the womb. This is the most degraded practice. It can only perpetuate the miserable material conditions of those who perform it. We have been reading in these verses about the fantastic and exotic lifestyle of the residents of these heavenly planets. This particular verse, it explains how people over there, their lives are so big, so expansive, and their bodily strength is compared to 10,000 elephants. They have sturdy bodies like thunderbolts. They have youthful duration, which is very pleasing. And especially men and women, they enjoy great sexual pleasure for a long, long duration of time. Now, whenever such fantastic descriptions are given about these regions, which is part of this material world, there is always a big but after all these descriptions. And over here it is mentioned how after enjoying all that, during the last year of their enjoyment, the wife has to conceive a child. There is pregnancy. So every enjoyment within this material world comes with a price tag. As they say, that there are no free lunches in this material world, except for our Sunday feast maybe. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, A Brahma Bhuvana Loka, that from the topmost planet down to the lowest, all places are places of misery. And over here we see that how this particular explanation is given after describing about all the wonderful things which happen in these heavenly planets. So we see this material world, the law of degradation, how it is so prominent. This material world is governed by the law of degradation. Everything degresses. And as against this, in the spiritual world, it is governed by the law of progression. Srila Prabhupada begins his purport by explaining this law of degradation in regards to the four yugas. He says, in Satya Yuga, everyone is pious and inclined towards God realization. And in Treta Yuga, sense gratification begins, but without tribulation. And in Dwapar Yuga, sense gratification comes with miseries, but they are not very stringent. But in Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada explains that it is so degraded that the miseries are so stringent, so graphic. Srila Prabhupada one time was discussing with Allen Ginsberg. There was a program arranged, a joint program arranged of Srila Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg in Ohio State University, Columbus. And during the program, it so happened that there was a wire which was supposed to tie the microphone around Srila Prabhupada's neck, which was missing. So Allen Ginsberg offered his shoelace to Srila Prabhupada, which of course Srila Prabhupada refused to accept. And Srila Prabhupada asked Nar Narayan Prabhu to give his sacred thread. And Srila Prabhupada used that sacred thread to tie the microphone. And after the program, Srila Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg, they were discussing in the temple room in Columbus. And in the discussion, Srila Prabhupada started discussing about Kali Yuga, wherein he was explaining to Allen that how this Kali Yuga will degrade to such a level wherein there would cease to be any foliage, animals will be only carnivorous animals left, human beings will be all cannibals, and the fruits will have more bigger seeds and thicker skins and less pulp in it. And any few pious devotees will be left. They'll have to hide in caves. So then Allen asked Srila Prabhupada, what about your disciples, Swamiji? And Srila Prabhupada said, by that time, they would all be gone back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada said, they are very advanced. They'll go back home, back to Godhead. And then Allen was very much concerned, so he asked, and what about us? So Srila Prabhupada leaned over him and in a very stern voice said, whoever will be remaining towards the end of Kali Yuga, I will eat you and you will eat me. And if you want to avoid that, you also go back home, back to Godhead. So Kali Yuga, amongst all the yugas, is like the bottommost refuse of the trash can of this material world. Whatever we see is so degraded and so filthy, as here in Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, the law of degradation, how it takes place within this material world. And we see in every aspect in this material world how things, situations, our bodies, everything, they take the path of degradation. Like, for example, religion. How religion digresses in this material world, especially in this age of Kali Yuga. And therefore Krishna says that I come again and again to regress back the decline of religion, the glani which takes place, the digression which takes place. And then we have material objects, material situations which undergo degradation. From an apple to the big empires of this material world, everything undergoes degradation. The big empires, we just read about them in the history books. They are just names locked up in the history books now. Alexander the Great, who conquered so many different nations and provinces, he was defeated by just some mosquitoes when he invaded India. Napoleon, Srila Prabhupada was in France, and over there people were speaking about Napoleon. So Prabhupada asked this question, France is here, but where is Napoleon now? As far as Napoleon is concerned, it is said that in his last days he was captured by the English soldiers at St. Helena, and he was fed with arsenic as slow poison in his food. And to humiliate him to the max, he was fed with horse urine. That was the culmination of his big successful victory over so many nations. Satsarup Das Goswami, in one of his poems, in which he speaks about time, he speaks very wonderfully, saying that in this world we see a grasshopper eats or kills an insect. That grasshopper is killed by a lizard. Frog kills that lizard. Snake kills that frog. Eagle kills that snake, man kills that eagle, time kills them all. So one living entity might be a food for another living entity, but all living entities are food for time. That is the law of degradation which we see in this material world. So material situations and positions, they undergo degradation. And then we have these material bodies which undergoes degradation. Maharaj Kulashekhar, in that famous verse, he says, Idam shariram parinama peshalam patatyavashyam shati sandhi jarjaram kimaushadi prichhasi mudha durmate niramayam krishna rasayanam pibaha. Patatyavashyam, there is no doubt about this, that this material body which we have got is going to digress. And various sections in the Srimad Bhagavatam explains about this particular phenomena which takes place within this material body as far as the digression is concerned. Dadichi Muni, when he was approached by King Indra and all the other demigods, when they were troubled by Vritrasura, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead asked King Indra to approach Dadichi Muni so that he can give his body, his bones can be used to make a thunderbolt. So when King Indra and all the other demigods, they approached Dadichi Muni, Dadichi Muni in several of the verses giving instructions to the demigods, in a beautiful verse he explains about this material body. He says,
Aho dainyam aho kashtam parakyai kshanabhangurai yannopakuryad asvarthai martasva gyati vigrahai.
He is saying that aho dainyam aho kashtam, that this material body which we have got is miserable and it is full of kashta, it is full of tribulations. And what is the ultimate culmination of this material body which we have got? Parakyai kshanabhangurai. It is going to be eaten by dogs and jackals. That is the ultimate destination of this material body. Unless this material body is used for a higher purpose, this material body will culminate into that. It's food for dogs and jackals. And actually we see that externally this physical material body might look very attractive, but the contents within this material body, who is attracted to the contents within this material body? When we have some cut wound, the only living entities which are attracted to that wound is all the germs, all the flies, all the insects. Now we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam the beauty of Lord Sri Krishna, that he was so beautiful that even other living entities who are not in the human form were attracted to Krishna's beauty. The bees, the butterflies, you know, the deers. When Krishna would be going to the cowherd pastures, bees would be humming around the lotus face of Krishna, thinking that it is a lotus flower which is moving. And in this material world, our physical bodies, when we move, who are attracted, who go along with us? Mosquitoes, flies, germs, bacteria, viruses. We don't read in the Srimad Bhagavatam that mosquitoes were humming around Krishna's lotus face, or bacteria or viruses. So this is the attractive feature of this material body which we have, that it is simply attractive for mosquitoes, flies, germs, insects and bacteria. So therefore over here, Dadichi Muni is saying, Aho dainyam aho kashtam parakyai kshanabhangurai. And that word kshanabhangurai, our acharyas explain that one meaning of this word kshanabhangur is that it can die at any moment. And another meaning of this word kshanabhangur is it is dying at every moment. So we are, in one sense we can say, progressing towards death, which is another form of digression. And in this very fifth canto, Lord Brahma, giving instructions to Maharaj Priyavrat, again explains about the futility of this material body, in which he says,
Bhavaya nashaya cha karma kartum shokaya mohaya sada bhayaya sukhaya dukhaya cha deha yogam avyakta dishtam janatanga dhate.
Lord Brahma is explaining to Maharaj Priyavrat that these material bodies which we have got, it is given by providence, but these material bodies are only sources of misery.
Bhavaya nashaya, first of all, they'll be finished. Nashaya, although we see them taking birth, but they'll be finished. Chakarma kartum, according to our karma. And while we are living, what do we experience within these material bodies? Shokaya, mohaya, sadabhayaya. We experience lamentation, illusion, and fear. And sukhaya dukhaya cha deha yoga. This is the only combination which we get from this material body. Sometimes some little pleasure and sometimes misery. So herein, the material body has been explained to be so temporary, to be so futile. And in various places, we may find that this human form of life is glorified. But unless this human form of life is used for some higher cause, just this material body, which is full of all these miseries, is of no use. To get back this material body is of no purpose. Again, in the 9th canto, Maharaj Nimi, who wanted to perform a yajna, and he invited Vashishtha Muni to perform that yajna. And at the same time, Vashishtha Muni also got invitation from the heavenly planets. So he thought, over there are higher prospects. So he preferred to first go to the heavenly planets and asked Maharaj Nimi to wait until he came back. But Maharaj Nimi, he thought that this material body, this human form of life is kshana bhangur. I may die at any moment. So why should I wait? So he went ahead with the sacrifice. And when Vashishtha Muni came to know, Vashishtha Muni became so angry that he cursed Maharaj Nimi that you may die, may fall dead. And Maharaj Nimi also cursed Vashishtha Muni that you may also fall dead. So both of them were dead now. It was a big problem. Here was a king who was dead and this great rishi was also dead. So the demigods, they came to the rescue and first they revived back Vashishtha Muni. And when they wanted to revive back the body of Maharaj Nimi, in a beautiful verse, Maharaj Nimi explains and stops all the demigods that, please do not give me back this material body. And he says, Deham navarurutseham dukha shoka bhayavaham sarvatrasya yato mrityur matsyanam udake yatha. Deham na avarurutseham. I do not want this material body again. Why? Dukha shoka bhayavaham. Because this material body is filled with dukha, shoka, and bhay. And he gave a wonderful example. Matsyanam udake yata sarvatrasya yato mrityur. Just like a fish which is surrounded by the source of its life, which is water, but is always seen in so much of fear of death. So fish, which is always surrounded by its source, but is still fearful of death. So what to speak of me, who is always surrounded by death? Why should I desire to get this material body, which is the source of death? So therefore, he rejected this. And we have several places in the Srimad Bhagavatam wherein the material body has been so graphically described and the futility has been described. Then we have material relationships which undergo the law of digression. We have the graphic example of Maharaj Chitraketu and his son Harshashoka. When Harshashoka was revived back by Narad Muni, and Maharaj Chitraketu is still lamenting, so Harshashoka is speaking to Maharaj Chitraketu. He is making a very wonderful point in regards to material relationships. He is saying that these material relationships which you are so attached to, they are like being in a river which is going at a very fast pace. A river which is going at a very fast pace, but the river is going towards the ocean of birth and death. So yes, in a river you may find there is a lot of momentum. So similarly, in this material world, we find that materialistic people, they have a lot of momentum in their life. They have a lot of activity going on in their life. People coming together, having families and relatives and expansions and communities and nations and empires. So many things happening. But herein, Harsha Ashoka is saying that it is like being in a river, like some straws or twigs or branches which are there in the river and might be for some time enjoying the current of that river, flowing with the current of that river. But they do not know that that river is actually heading towards the ocean of birth and death. Pejavar Swami gave a wonderful example once that a crow once saw a dead body floating in a river. So the crow was very much attracted to this dead body and immediately landed on this dead body and started pecking on it. And because the dead body was floating in the river, it was also moving. Now the crow was so absorbed in enjoying that dead body that the crow was not realizing that along with the dead body, which is in the river is going towards the ocean. And the crow was totally absorbed. The crow didn't have even a single moment to look up and see and find out that where he's heading towards along with the dead body. So the dead body entered as a river entered into the ocean. And when the crow finally, after he sufficiently enjoyed that dead body, and when he looked up, looked around him, saw that it's only water all over. And because being a crow doesn't have the capacity to fly over oceans, not such a powerful bird to fly over oceans. And also, whatever was left over of that dead body was being eaten by the aquatics from below in that ocean. So the crow was in that precarious condition. So the example is given. Similarly, we living entities, the materialistic living entities within this material world, are compared to the crows, and that dead body is compared to the sense gratification which people are so much absorbed in. And that river is compared to the river of time, which is taking that sense gratification, the living entity, into the ocean of birth and death. So Harsha Ashoka is giving that wonderful example that yes, the river might be seen advancing or progressing, but that advancement of that river, that progress of that river, is only towards the ocean of birth and death. So therefore, real salvation is to stop the cycle of birth and death. Srila Prabhupada was in Australia and devotees brought one reporter. And this reporter was very favorable towards the devotees and wanted to print some good articles, some favorable articles. But he was trying to impress upon Srila Prabhupada that, you know, he's favoring the devotees, he's favoring Srila Prabhupada. So he asked this question to Srila Prabhupada: what is real happiness? And sensing his intention, Srila Prabhupada asked him, retorted back the question to him and asked, what do you think? What is real happiness? And he said, real happiness means to seek happiness within. Now this is a wonderful answer which we would like to hear. But Srila Prabhupada in that particular instance said, that is dog's happiness. Even a dog enjoys within when he barks. Real happiness will only come when we stop the cycle of birth and death. Then only real happiness begins. Unless we are in this material world, there is no real happiness over here in this material world. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave that verdict that unless we stop the cycle of birth and death, that is real progress. In this very fifth canto, it is explained that every living entity in every creation is given a chance to close this business within this material world of repeated cycle of birth and death and go to the spiritual world. But when living entities do not fulfill that particular goal, then how not fulfilling that particular goal ultimately creates the ultimate destruction? And when living entities do not fulfill that goal, it is explained, Lord Sankarshan becomes very angry. And he becomes so angry that in between from his eyebrows come 11 Rudras, who are also in a very angry mood since they have come from the angry eyebrows of Lord Sankarshan. And they then do the ultimate annihilation. So the ultimate annihilation takes place when Lord Sankarshan becomes angry seeing that the living entities are not fulfilling the goal of stopping the cycle of birth and death. So herein we see the law of degradation within this material world, whether it is yugas, whether it is religion, whether it is material situations, material bodies, material relationships. This material world is governed by the law of degradation. The graph of this material world goes down always. And as against this, in the spiritual world, it is governed by the law of progression. Everything is on the progressive side. As Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his instructions, he's praying and he's saying that how the chanting of Hare Krishna leads one into that ever expanding progressive ocean of bliss. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. That ananda is simply vardhanam. It is simply progressing. Supposed to be progressing also, we can say. And then, if we see in our revealed scriptures, how when things are mentioned in our scriptures, how they are also in regards to the law of progression, which we find. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna begins by saying to Arjun the difference between body and soul. Dehinosmin yatha dehe. And progresses further and culminates in sarvadharman parityajya. So Bhagavad Gita, we see how the progression takes place. And where Bhagavad Gita leaves off, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins. And Srimad Bhagavatam begins with Janmadasya. And further progresses and is also compared to the transcendental body of Lord Sri Krishna and how the progression is compared with that. The first two cantos are the lotus feet and then the further cantos are compared to the further progressive limbs of Lord Sri Krishna. And the 10th canto is compared to the beautiful face of Lord Sri Krishna. And the culmination of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that the glories of Sankirtan is being spoken. And where Srimad Bhagavatam leaves off, the glories of Sankirtan is spoken. From there begins the Chaitanya Charitamrita and goes deeper and deeper and progresses further into the depths of this Harinam Sankirtan and culminates in the instructions which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote with his own hand. And the culmination of those instructions is Aslishva Padartam Pinashtumam. This is the mood of Srimati Radharani. So this is how we see in our scriptures also, the progression is seen. Nectar of instruction, Rupa Goswami begins with Vashovegam and culminates in Radhakund. The nectar of devotion begins with the characteristics of devotional service and culminates in Ragatmika Bhakti. And we also see in the various incarnations which the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes within this material world, how there is a progression. We have Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narsingha. The beginning incarnations, we don't find such detailed descriptions. We don't find Matsya, Kurma, Varaha in their Bal Leela or Vatsalya Leela or what to speak of Madhurya Leela. But as the incarnation progresses, we see after Lord Varahadev, all of these other incarnations before, they took animal forms. And as Lord Narsingadev, this was half animal and half man, which further progressed into Lord Vamandev, was a complete human being but came as a dwarf. And then we had Parshuram and Lord Ram, in which the pastimes were so descriptive, had Bal Leela, and he had Vatsala Leela, and along with the consort Mother Sita. But still Lord Ram was Maryada Purushottam. And then we have Krishna, who is Purna Purushottam, and the complete exhibition of the personality is seen. And then we have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who further progressed, and we have from Sambhog to Vipralambha, the highest aspect of the ecstasy of God consciousness, which was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is the ecstasy in separation. We have Akrura when he was entering Vrindavan, how he was progressing in his consciousness as he was entering Vrindavan. As he left from Mathura, Akrura was in the emotion of fear. He was fearing whether I'll be able to see Krishna and Balaram because of my fallen condition. I don't have any pious background also. And plus, I'm coming as a messenger of Kamsa, who is the enemy of Krishna. So he was having this emotion of fear as he set off from Mathura. But as he was progressing towards Vrindavan, that emotion of fear progressed into confidence, wherein Akrura became confident that yes, I may be unqualified, I may be fallen, but Krishna and Balaram, they are so powerful, their mercy is so powerful, that definitely I will receive their mercy. So the progression was from fear into confidence, and the highest progression which Akrura experienced as he entered Vrindavan and saw the lotus footprints of Krishna and Balaram, he was in ecstasy. And he jumped off from his chariot and started rolling. And Shukadeva Goswami, in a beautiful verse, he explains that this is the ultimate progressive value of every human being. He's saying, Dehabhritam iyan artho hitva dambham bhayam shucham sandeshat yo harirlinga darshana shravana dibhi. Dehabhritam iyan artho. This is the only progressive value which every human being should aspire for, as we are seeing in Akrura's condition over here. Shukadeva Goswami is saying that he is rolling in the dust of Vrindavan in ecstasy, and he is giving up all fear, he is giving up all pride, he is giving up all lamentation. Hitva dambham, hitva bhayam, hitva shucham. And in that ecstasy, he is simply absorbed in thinking of Krishna and Balaram. And what to speak of that ecstasy, Akrura was envisioning. Initially he was fearing, but that confidence and ecstasy, it rose to such higher levels that he was envisioning that what Krishna will do to him, how Krishna will embrace him, how Krishna will ask about his welfare, and how Balaramji will wash his feet and offer him some yogurt and honey. So in Akrura's example, we see how the law of progression takes place in the emotions while entering into Vrindavan. Now within this material world, while we are practicing our sadhana bhakti, and since we have discussed about the law of progression in the realm of spiritual consciousness, sometimes we see that in our sadhana bhakti, we don't see that law taking place. In fact, we see the opposite sometimes taking place. That in our attempt to progress in devotional service, sometimes we see that we slip from that path. Maybe in a subtle way, sometimes in a gross way. But Krishna says, even if somebody falls down on this path of devotional service, is still a great soul. Apichet suduracharo bhajate mam ananya bhag sadhur eva samantavya. Krishna is saying that he is still a sadhu. He is still on the progressive path. And of course we have that famous verse wherein Krishna is saying that on this path of devotional service there is no loss or diminution. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. In fact, one can be saved from the greatest danger. One time one disciple of Srila Prabhupada who was making life members in Delhi, he came up to Srila Prabhupada and asked that I'm every day traveling these DTC buses and making life members. So what if I die one day in these DTC buses? What will happen to me? So Srila Prabhupada jokingly said, don't worry, you won't become one of the DTC buses driver or conductor. You will become a life member maybe. So Srila Prabhupada assured him that even if you die, you know, in this material world, in a material situation outside, but still, your next birth is assured by Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada said that the power of devotional service is such that in this material world, the scientist may come up with big nuclear and atomic bombs, which has such power that it can destroy big, big nations. But Srila Prabhupada said that just the sound of one of our pujaris ringing the bell during the aarti is much, much more powerful than the effect of these big atomic bombs. Why? Because just that sound vibration of the ringing of the bell in the aarti can destroy the sinful reactions of everyone within this material world. That is the power of devotional service. And therefore Srila Prabhupada, he one time said that the destiny of everyone within this Hare Krishna movement is to actually sit on the banks of Jamuna and enjoy a nice picnic with Krishna. That is the ultimate destiny of everyone within this Hare Krishna movement. And yes, we might experience that our momentum might not be seen obviously so much on the progressive side, as we see people of this material world, how much there is momentum in their materialistic activities. But we should understand that the very fact that we are on the right path, even if we may have our tiny toddler steps, but still, even if they are little steps, we are progressing. The example is given, just like when you are tightening a nut or a screw. So initially, we may find that we can do it very easily when the screw is loose. But as that screw or nut gets more and more tightened, we have to apply more and more pressure. And as we are applying more and more pressure, we might feel that it's becoming more and more difficult. But actually, we are working our way towards tightening that nut properly. So similarly, in our devotional service, we might find at a certain point of time, there might seem to be some kind of stagnancy, no progress at all. But if, or very slow progress. But even if the progress is very slow, but if we keep on tightening, as one keeps on tightening that nut or screw, definitely we will work towards the way of success and progress. As Prabhupada said, that the destiny of everyone in this Hare Krishna movement is to sit on the banks of Jamuna and enjoy a nice picnic with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.